This week's parsha, Parshas Emor, deals with the Chagim, the different Jewish festivals that we have. And included within the festivals, it mentions the period of time between Pesach and Shavuot, which is the period which we refer to as Sfira Ta'omer, the counting of the Omer. We know that this is a time of anticipation of receiving the Torah, and later on in Jewish history, it has turned into a period of mourning as well, with the time of Lag BaOmer, the death of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that very special experience where he explained that his death is to be celebrated because the secrets of the Torah were revealed on this day. It's a time within this period that we celebrate. What is the reason for the period of mourning? So our rabbis tell us in source number 3 that Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students, and all of them died at the same time of the year during the Omer because they refused, they failed to give honor to each other. Shelo nagu kavod ze baze. Although this chazal does not tell us exactly when these students stopped dying, the later commentators fill in the details. There are those who have their hair cut from Lag BaOmer onwards, since at this time they, the students of Rabbi Akiva, Pasku milamot, stop dying, and that's the tour. I'd like to look at a very interesting approach of the Zohar HaKadosh, an approach of the deeper wisdom of Torah, which we generally don't involve ourselves with for obvious reasons, and we'll see that clearly today. But I'd like to try to get perhaps a taste, a sense, to see the depth of Torah, to see the breadth of Torah, to see how much there is to learn and to delve and to explore. The Zohar HaKadosh is brought down in the Sefer Asara Mamaros Rabbi Mami Pano, who says the following. This is source number 2. There is a connection between the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva that died to 24,000 individuals that died in the sin of Baal Peor. Just to remind ourselves of the story in Source 1, at the end of Parshas Balak, we have that Israel settled in the Shittim, which was the name of the place, and the people began to commit harlotry with the daughters of Moab. They invited the people to the feast of their gods. The people ate and prostrated themselves to their gods, and Israel became attached to Baal Peor, and the wrath of Hashem flared up against Israel. So the place was Shittim, the god that the Jewish people worshipped, the god of Moab, was Baal Peor. And the Torah tells us how an individual from the tribe of Shimon, a leader, Zimri ben Salu, took a princess of Midian, Cosby Batsur, and he publicly was with this woman, and how Pinchas killed both of them, and that stopped the plague. The Torah tells us, and the plague was halted from the children of Israel, and those that died in the plague were 24,000. So there seems to be obviously a connection in the number of 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva that died, and the 24,000 individuals from the tribe of Shimon who were killed in this plague by worshipping Baal Peor. And the obvious question is, there must be something deeper here than just a number of 24,000 and 24,000. So I'd like to try to explore on 3 different dimensions what is the connection between the two. And I'll say at the outset, the first level we're going to do, even though Baruch Hashem, we try to be very driven by what can we learn for our lives, the first level, my focus is going to try just to open us up to the depth and breadth of Torah, and I think that in itself is going to be a little bit unusual from our general approach, but it's going to be, that in itself, I think, will be enough to inspire us. And then the next 2, which we'll focus on more specifically, will be what we can learn for our lives, the message of the connection between these 24,000 students. The first approach I'm going to do primarily outside because of the details and the complexity, I think it will flow much better if we just speak about it. And if one would like to be ma'ayin inside, tavo lem bracha. It comes from Pinchas Friedman, Belzer, Rosh Hashiva, who wrote this maimer on Lag BaOmer. And he raises a question in the language of the Torah that we spoke about, of Pasku Milamot. And this is in source 4, they stop from dying. He says, stop from dying implies that some stop from dying, which means that some remained alive. These stop from dying. Stop from dying means that there were a lot of people, and now the dying has stopped, which means that there are those who are left over. But we know that all 24,000 students died. So what does it mean, stop from dying? What's the implication here? So some explain it to mean that stop from dying means that although these 24,000 students did indeed die, Rabbi Akiva did have a legacy that continued. And there were 5 major students that he taught afterwards, and it's from these 5 students that we basically have the whole oral transmission and the whole teachings of Rabbi Akiva that have come down to us. And we know that one of these students is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who we celebrate on Lag BaOmer. And obviously the question then is, why are we only focusing on Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai when there were 5 students? What happened to the other 4? So Rav Friedman wants to suggest something very, very interesting. He says that we know, our rabbis tell us, and this is in source number 7, that the Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 martyrs, of whom Rabbi Akiva was one of them, came as an atonement for the sale of Yosef HaTzadik. These 10 martyrs were people who came, either they were the reincarnation, or they on some level exacted a tikkun, a rectification, for the sin of the sale of the brothers. But he notes that it was not enough just to have these individuals rectify the sale. The students of Rabbi Akiva, 3 in particular, came very specifically to rectify the 3 major players, so to speak, in the sale. The 3 major players in the sale were Yehuda, who suggested, let's not kill him, let's sell him. Yosef, who himself, by speaking Lashon Hara about his brothers, caused, in a sense, his own jealousy against him to be sold. And Shimon, who was the one who was really, you know, the leader of the pack, so to speak, to have him thrown into the pit and have him killed. These 3 individuals, Yehuda ben Yaakov, Yosef ben Yaakov, and Shimon ben Yaakov, come back in the form of 3 of Rabbi Akiva's students, 3 of the major students of Rabbi Akiva. And with this in mind, we can explain that famous Gemara in Shabbos in source number 8 that we're familiar with, of how did Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai have to flee and hide in that cave for 12 years. So the Gemara tells us the following. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai, Rosh HaMejabrim b'chol makom, Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai, who was the chief spokesman in all places, was speaking about the great things that the Romans did. He's praised how they created marketplaces and bathhouses and roads, and what the Romans did was tremendous. Sitting with him was Rabbi Yossi, and he was shut up, he was silent. And then Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who was also there, responded in the negative. No, whatever the Romans did, they did for themselves. They had no interest in helping us, and we shouldn't lord them and praise them too much. It was an individual there, Yehuda ben Gerim, who heard this entire conversation. He repeated it back to the Romans. The Romans then accorded each one what they deserved. Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai, who praised them, he was promoted. He got a higher position. Rabbi Yossi, who was shatak, who was silent, he had to be exiled to Sipori. And Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was condemned to death, and he had to flee, and ultimately he was in the cave for 12 years. So Friedman points out that these 3 individuals and what happened to them is not by accident. Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai, who was a rectification of Yehuda ben Yosef. Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai is a Rosh HaMedavrim. He is the chief spokesman, because ultimately it was Yehuda ben Yaakov who tried to save Yosef, who said, let's kill him, and who was able to stand up and protect Binyamin, and who went and who defended Binyamin in front of Yosef. So now in this Gilgul, in this round, Yehuda Bar Ilai becomes elevated. He gets a higher position. Rabbi Yossi is a rectification of Yosef and Yaakov. And we know that it says about Rabbi Yossi, Miyamai, the end of 11a, Lo Avarti al Divrei Chavari. I never went over what my friend said. I was very careful about the words of my friend. And obviously in this Gilgul, in this rectification, if Yosef HaTzadik's challenge, at least according to Pshuto Shemikra, was speaking the negative reports about his brothers, in this time around, Rabbi Yossi was very careful about the way he spoke to others and about repeating what others said. And therefore, it makes sense in this case that Rabbi Yossi was shut up. He was silent. He learned his lesson of not speaking, and in this case, in this conversation, he didn't say a word. And therefore, his punishment was that he was sent in exile to Tzipori, and that also stopped by accident. As we saw in last week's parasha of Tazria Mitzora, that the purification of a person who spoke Lashon Hara, spoke negative, part of it was to bring birds as their kapara, as their atonement. And why birds? So Rashi tells us, based on our rabbis, that birds have this ability to always speak, right? They're always twittering, they're always talking. So the one who spoke Lashon Hara will bring birds to remind him of what he sinned with. So Tzipori is from the word Tzipor. It makes sense there for Rabbi Yossi, who is working on the rectification of speech, should be exiled to a place that reminds us of the essence of learning the lesson of speech. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is the rectification of Shimon ben Yaakov, who clearly, he was the major player in having Yosef HaTzadik originally, you know, let's throw him into one of the pits. And they say that he was taken and he was thrown into the pit. They wanted to kill him, throw him into the pit. It was Shimon ben Yaakov. So just like as a result of this, Yosef HaTzadik was ultimately put in prison in Beit Potifar for 12 years, so too Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai also had to go in his own quote-unquote imprisonment. He had to be locked up in that cave for 12 years as well. That extra year was something that almost came from his own. But the 12 corresponds to the 12. But then we ask ourselves, well, how do I understand this? Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai accomplished a tremendous amount in the cave. He was able to write the Zohar, the secrets of the Torah. And the answer to that question is because we need to look at an interesting Zohar, which describes, and this is in source number 12. The Zohar tells us that when the Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and his Chavraya and his group of students, Kishigil Parshas Kedoshim Hayu Smechim, when they reached Parshas Kedoshim, last week's Parsha, they were unusually happy. And Parshas Kedoshim deals with the first pasuk of what is Kedusha. It's about separating ourselves, prushim to you me erva, from immoral relations. And that, the reason why they were so happy in coming to this section, is that is really the essence of what Shimon ben Yaakov, right, was about. Why was Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai allowed, was given this tzchus of being able to write the secrets of the Torah? Because there was something very, very powerful about Shimon ben Yaakov. He was the one who took the stance, HaKazonat HaSelach Hotenu, should our sister be like a harlot? And he was the one who defended against the act of Shechem ben Hamor and killed the city of Shechem for the immoral act that they did. And that is why, really, Megalglim Zchus Leidei Zakai, through someone who did something positive, even though his critique and the way he did it perhaps was wrong, but it's, and again, the ends don't justify the means, granted, but his mindset of trying to stand up for the purity of his sister, the purity of the Jewish people, it was therefore through him that Yosef was sent to Egypt. And Yosef himself stood up against promiscuity, which allowed the Jewish people to withstand this promiscuousness in Egypt, which ultimately allowed them to be able to accept the Torah. So because ultimately something good came from Yosef being in in Egypt, because it paved the way for the Jewish people to withstand these evil influences. So Shimon, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, was able to have the schus of writing these aspects of Torah. But Rav Friedman goes on, well, just another minute or two on this, he goes on to explain that there's an idea, which is a very deep idea, that we find in source number 16. Our rabbis tell us the following, that Alpia Yadua Kimiyasha Chata Dama Rishon Beitzadato Vera Nit Arvu Nitzutzek Du Shavish Ubitocha Tuma. From the time that Adam Arishon sinned, so that a lot of sparks of holiness found themselves in impure places. Shimon ben Yaakov, on the level that he was on in his Ruach HaKodesh, and his divine level of inspiration, saw in the people of Shechem the nitzotzos, the sparks of the students of Rabbi Akiva. He saw great people here, but they had sunk to the levels of depravity of being in this city. And therefore, Shimon wanted to, so to speak, release these sparks. And therefore, he insisted that they first have a bris milah. He first insisted that they are able to reach levels of kedusha, of holiness, and then he killed them in order to be able to extricate these sparks. And again, obviously there are a lot of questions to be asked. I always say when you don't understand something, so the questions we don't understand, the answers we don't understand, we're trying to get a feel, a sense of the depths of Torah. Obviously there's a lot here. And he explains that the individual, Shechem ben Hamor, is really originally Akiva ben Yosef. And that explains that when Akiva made, when before he was a Talmid Chacham, he made the statement. He says that if I would meet a Talmid Chacham, when I was an Amin Aretz, when I was a simple person, if I would meet a scholar, I would have bitten him like a donkey. It's a very strange expression. Why would you bite him like a donkey? You bite him like a lion. But it makes sense, according to this, that his original spark was Shechem ben Hamor. That's who he was. He was connected to this personality of the Hamor when he was an Am Haaretz, when he was a regular person. Because Shimon was the one who was able to release these sparks, we now have these 24,000 people of Shechem coming back in now, in the second round, as the people from Shimon, from the tribe of Shimon, who were involved in the sin of Baal Peor. So we see that these souls have now reached a higher level of elevation. They now became Jews from the tribe of Shimon, and obviously from the tribe of Shimon, because it was Shimon who was responsible to get them out of Shechem. And here, Rabbi Akiva's Gilgul in the second round turned into Zimri ben Salu, the Nasi. And obviously there's a lot of Torah here, we'll just mention. And these students, these individuals were once again involved in promiscuity, and once again they died. And finally, they reached their ultimate rectification by coming back as the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva. And now they're holy individuals, they're people learning Torah, they're people who have reached great heights. But yet, because of their greatness, they were able to see Shlo Nagu Kavod Zebazeh. They were able to see, when they looked at each other, ah, you had sinned in cheating. How can I respect you? You were involved in this idol worship. And therefore, on that level, they lacked this aspect of respect, and therefore Hashem took them. But Paskumi Lamut, they stopped from dying because they were here now three times. They were here in the city of Shechem. They were here now in the sin of Baal Peor. And now the third time is the students of Rabbi Akiva. Therefore Paskumi Lamut, they stopped from dying. They have come and they have rectified themselves, as did Rabbi Akiva, the Rebbe. And that is why the time when they Paskumi Lamut, when they stopped from dying, is connected with Lag BaOmer, which is connected to the personality of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is ultimately the one, through his first appearance, so to speak, as Shimon Ben Yaakov, who was the one who made sure that these individuals were able to reach this level of rectification. So it's really the simcha of Shimon Ben Yaakov, the simcha of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that we're celebrating, that these sparks were able to finally be put into places of Kedusha, And it's this celebration of Kedusha, of holiness, of being able to maintain our standards that we celebrate. And it's not by accident that we know that we can just add on this piece that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was the one who taught that every single person has Kedusha, has holiness. Never judge a book by its cover. And that fits in so beautifully with this idea that Shimon ben Yaakov was able to see these sparks in the people of Shechem. And the time of Lag BaOmer, the day of Lag BaOmer, is really celebrating the inherent Kedusha, the power that each and every one of us has of holiness. And sometimes within our own lives, we're trapped within a trap of impurity, and our challenge and our job is to extricate ourselves to be able to embrace a life of Kedusha, a life of holiness. So that was our first level of connection, that these 24,000 students were the Gilgul, were the reincarnation, coming ultimately to take out these sparks, these negative sparks, and find a place of purity, of holiness. Okay. We've left that. Those of you who like the more concrete can now tune in a little bit more specifically. What is the connection between these 24,000 students and the people of that died in the plague? So I'd like to take a look at two approaches. The first, after this very deep one, the first is based on the Sifti Chaim, Rav Chaim Halpern from England, source 22. During the Omer period, we observe certain laws of mourning in memory of the Talmidei of Rabbi Akiva. Why is this tragedy commemorated in this way when many events were perhaps more tragic and yet are not observed as such? The Talmidei, the students, were punished lo nagu kovod zeh lazeh because they didn't show respect for one another. Why was there such a severe punishment for that? Rav Aaron Cutler Zatzal explains with the following idea. We know that on Yom Kippur there are two goats. One was offered for Hashem and one for the Azazel that went over the cliff. The goat for Azazel went to atone for the sins of the Jewish people, while the goat for Hashem is to atone for the Tumas HaMikdash, the defilement of the temple. Surely there are many things that the Kohani must be careful about. Yet on the holiest day, they have a whole sacrifice devoted just to this? The answer is that when a person has a certain tafki, a certain role to fulfill, and yet he doesn't achieve it, it's not just a regular sin, but his whole essence is damaged. The Kohanim have the job of looking after the Beis HaMikdash. If they fail to stop Tumah, impurity, from entering, even inadvertently, it isn't just that they've committed a sin, but their whole role and justification for living are in disrepute. And that explains as well the two kings of Israel, Shaul HaMelech from the tribe of Binyamin and David HaMelech from the tribe of Yehuda, both committed a sin. Shaul committed a sin by not killing the king of Amalek, of Agag, and David HaMelech committed a sin with Bathsheba, everyone understands the sin. By Shaul HaMelech, he loses his kingdom. By David HaMelech, he gets punished but moves right along. Why was there such a severe punishment for Shaul HaMelech? And the answer is the same thing. Shaul came from the tribe of Binyamin. Binyamin was the only tribe that didn't bow down to Esau. It was Binyamin's job. It was his whole tafki to be able to obliterate Amalek. By David HaMelech, this was just a point. It was a nekuda in his life, but it wasn't his whole lesson. It didn't affect his entire job. And therefore, because it affected the entire personality, the entire role of Shaul HaMelech, he was punished with such severity. And we therefore see here that there sometimes we're challenged in life in a small aspect of our personality, of our overall being. And there's sometimes a challenge comes in our very mahus, in our very essence. And the ones that come in our very essence are treated very differently than if they're just an ancillary point. And the same is true in 24 with the students of Rabbi Akiva. The Arizal says that the 24,000 Talmidim who died were Gilgulim of the 24,000 who died in the plague at the end of Parshas Balak during the sin of Baal Peor. This was a sin of arayos, of immorality. Ironically, the root of this sin is chesed. There is chesed, kindness in the right balance, which leads to kedusha, holiness. And there is also another type of chesed, that which is without limits, whereby one gives to everything and it results in immorality. The root of the first plague was chesed, and 24,000 died because it was unlimited chesed, without being tempered by gevura, by strength to restrain it. These souls came back down for a tikkun, and were given great powers of gevura to control the chesed. Rabbi Akiva taught them, and you shall love your fellow as yourself. This is a klal gadol b'Torah, a great principle of Torah. Their whole purpose in this world was regarding the matter of refining the trait of chesed and controlling it with gevura. Yet they failed and didn't honor each other properly, and that is why they died in the Omer. They died specifically at this time because this was their tafki, this was their whole essence. And if they weren't able to be able to fulfill their essence properly, so this was the punishment that ensued. To try to get a sense of what I believe the Shari Chaim is trying to teach us, brings to mind an idea based on Lubavitcher Rebbe in source 25 and 26, that we know that Avraham Avinu is the model of chesed. But we also know one opposite the other, Hashem made, is a cardinal rule. Every virtue has its corresponding evil, every positive force its negative counterpart. And therefore, Rabbi Tauber in the Sefer in 26 notes that love too has its rival evil. Love, after all, is an assertion of self, the extension of self to give and relate to another. Corrupted love is when the love asserts itself not to give, but to take. Not in the love of Abraham, but in the Philistines' lust. Not in care and compassion, but in egotistic self-gratification. And that's why as long as Abram was alive, only pure love flowed from his righteous wells. But after his death, the Philistines come near the fountainheads of love he had established in the land. And Plishtim itself means somebody who's open-ended, an uninhibited, an undisciplined love, a profane love bereft of the focus and commitment of Abram's holy love. So Avraham Avinu taught the people about love. But if you don't understand love correctly, then it's going to be about lust. It's going to be about taking, not about giving. And therefore, we need to have a Yitzchak Avinu to redig those wells, who's able to teach us what selflessness and fear of Hashem is about. All good love needs to be tempered with gvura. And we know this so clearly in Chinuch Banim, in dealing with children. The Gemara tells us, the right hand draws close and the left hand pushes away. There has to be this balance of love tempered with gvura, love tempered with an aspect of gvura, of discipline. To be too nice to children, we think, you know, our children will like us and it will be better. Wrong. Children like when there is discipline. Children like when there is this level of rules and regulations. You know, what just came to my mind as speaking, I hope by Rav Shfrajon, if something comes to your mind, to share it. Remember being in a teaching situation in New Jersey for 2 years. And most of my classes, I was, you know, as a young teacher, I was, you know, I wouldn't say buddy-buddy with the students, but, you know, it's a much more of a loving relationship with the students, much more laid back. And then there was one class which was a double class of 2 sixth grade together, Navi. And it was a large group of kids, and they were a tough group of kids. And I came in there like with a whip in hand, and I was very strict and very, you know, rigid. And this is the way I taught this class. What I found so fascinating is at the end of the year, when we decided to go to Israel to learn for a year, of all the classes, the only one that bought me a gift at the end of the year to wish me a Seichem L'Shalom of going to Israel was that sixth grade class. Was that class that I was the toughest with of all the classes that I taught. And it was so clear to me, not that I had the best relationship with that class, but there's something that they appreciate about the rigidness, the strictness, that this is really what kids are craving for, and not what we mistakenly think. Yes, there has to be love, and it has to be attention, for sure, but it has to be with the sense of limitations as well. How do we understand this in terms of Rabbi Akiva's students who had this love, but without this gvura, without being tempered? So perhaps we can explain it based on an insight of the Shemi Shmuel in source number 27. The Shemi Shmuel points out when a person shows respect and honor to another, this feeling springs from recognition that his friend is superior to him in one way or another. There are so many facets to human nature that any individual excel in at least one detail. This feeling will be reciprocated so that in any society, such as that of Rabbi Akiva's disciples, each member will be able to honor each other. But this works only within certain constraints, provided that the constituents of the group continue to view each other as distinct people. This mutual admiration functions correctly, but let us imagine that the members of the society become too close to each other, regarding themselves as mere part of a whole, rather than a discrete entity, perhaps even as limbs of the same body, and that just as in a body, the left arm doesn't praise the right arm for being stronger, so too the members of this fraternity cease to honor each other, taking each constituent's special attributes for granted. We may suggest this is the reason why the disciples of Rabbi Akiva failed to give honor to each other. And we know that we need to be able to see the uniqueness, the individuality in each and every person. You know, it's very fascinating. People always ask the question, or very often ask the question, how could it be that the students of Rabbi Akiva who personified, to love your friend as yourself is a great principle in Torah. How is it possible that his students failed in this area? So according to the Shemi Shmuel, it's the exact opposite. They excelled in this area so much. They had so much love that what they were missing was the Gevurah. They loved each other with such intense love that they failed to see each other as distinct entities. And because of this, they failed to accord honor to each other. And this is perhaps the idea of the love without the Gevurah, without the ability to restrain themselves. And that's why Rabbi Akiva's students, who came as a rectification of this uninhibited, almost Philistine type of love in the story of Baal Peor, they had to come and redeem this love now with the Ava, Azus, the Kedusha of love, of being able to temper it with boundaries and restrictions, and because that was their whole essence, and they failed to do so, they had that love without the Gevura, they were meted a very harsh punishment because this was their essence, and in this they failed. And this obviously, on this level, the lesson is very clear, that in our lives, relationships have to be accorded this right hand draws close while the left hand pushes away, and we have what we call striking the balance. The final approach is approach from a new sefer called Maasei Rokeim, Rav Kalman Bar, who's the Rebbe in Yeshiva Keren B'Yavne, where he speaks about that there's a pasuk in Yoel that describes the Nachal HaShitim. The Medrash speaks about that there is a Ma'ayan Shitim. There's like a wellspring of Shitim. Again, Shitim is the place where they worship Baal Peor, where this wellspring has come from the place of stone. Again, the place of immorality. But he knows, based on the pasuk in Yoel, that in the future, Hashem is going to dry up this wellspring, and he's going to have a wellspring come from Beit Hashem, which is going to feed properly this Nachal Shitim, which Rav Bar explains means that this wellspring is not just water, it's an ideology. There's a negative part of this ideology that's rooted in stone, and there's also a positive part of this ideology that can come from Beit Hashem, from the house of God. Let's explain. He quotes here, based on the Sefer Sharashim of the Radak, in the asterisk in 29, that there's something very fascinating by the Hebrew language. You have some words that the very same root can mean opposite things. We'll take the root of Sharesh. Sharesh means roots, but Lahashrish means to uproot. So the very same idea of being able to root and to plant, that same word can mean to uproot. And he says the same thing holds by Shin Ted Hey. Shitim, Shita, Shtus. A Shita is a mindset. I have a Shita. I have a certain path. You can have a path of foolishness, or you can have a path of Kedusha, a path of holiness. The choice is ours. When the people were in Shitim, and they connected themselves to Baal Peor, these people clearly went in the path of shtus, the path of immorality, the path of foolishness. What exactly was the sin of Baal Peor? Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, based on our rabbis, explains in Source 31 that Baal Peor is one of the most revolting and disgusting forms of idol worship. The Gemara relates that those who worshipped Baal Peor would consume various laxatives and then proceed to relieve themselves before the idol. What attraction could such a disgusting form of idolatry contain for Israel? By way of illustration of its abominable nature, the Gemara relates the story of a non-Jewish woman who became extremely ill, and she pledged to worship every existing idol if she would recover. She regained her health and proceeded to worship every idol. When she came to this idol, she said, "I'd rather be ill again rather than worship this idol." So what is its attraction? So he explains in very deep way in 32a. Baal Peor represents the tearing down of all moral and religious restrictions and prohibitions. Idolaters too had their morals manifested by their deity and by the mode of its worship. The worshippers of Baal Peor rebelled against these very strictures, proclaiming their complete lack of recognition of any system of value whatsoever. This iconoclasm and espousal of an anarchy became their very god. And that is why the lure of this ideology is the lure of permissiveness and lack of any restraints. And we see this, my friend, in our contemporary society. It's this very idea that anything goes. You know, I just come to mind living in L.A. for quite a number of years. The different color hair, the orange and the purple and the streaked orange and purple. You know, the imagery of a person dressed like this on roller skates wheeling a baby down Melrose. You know, that's what you saw in L.A. You know, earrings and every pierced part of the body and those parts of the body being exposed. That aspect is something that's very powerful. We see it in our society, this permissiveness. Don't tell me what to do. That's what the idea of relieving oneself in front of Baal Peor was about. It was just about no strictures. I can be my own person. And obviously this has, as it did in Shittim, this is a Shita, this is an approach, which obviously has disastrous results, because anyone who follows really the feelings of their own heart and creates such permissiveness is basically, you know, heading straight downhill into the abyss of nothingness. However, my friends, there is another aspect of Shittim. The Medrash says at the end of 35, Davar Acher Chatu B'Shittim, they sinned in Shittim, Vilaku b'shitim, and they got punished in Shittim, umitrapim b'shitim, but they'll be healed in Shittim. How will they be healed in Shittim? So again, it's that verse that this Ma'ayan, the spring will come from the house of God and will water the Nachal Shittim. We know that the Beis HaMikdash itself, the Mishkan, was made of Atzei Shittim Omdi. There is an aspect of a Shita that can be omdim, that can be positive. And that is the idea that a person can have a approach. And this approach in 36, not to take the paved road, not to do that which everyone is doing, but it's being an individual, not in terms of following your own ideology, but to do it as an Eved Hashem. It's the ability to raise a person in their individualistic tendencies to be able to reach great heights. We have a tendency within life to be very, very concerned about what will people say. And he quotes here the Mesillas Yesharim, the English, again, Rabbi Yaakov Hillel in 37. We can't bear the teasing and the taunting of our friend. Would you look at him? When did he become such a fanatic? We look at way people look at us and we don't want to be different. We want to conform. We want to be like everybody else. Which is fine to some extent. But there is very much a place, and we don't give enough voice to this place, to be able to express our passion, our yearning, again, unrestricted love and clinging to Hashem, which can be expressed in positive ways as a shita, as a path in the service of Hashem. Perhaps the greatest model of this is David HaMelech, who when bringing the Aron, when bringing the Ark to Shalayim, was dancing with all of his strength. And Michal, his wife, critiqued him and said, you're exposing yourself in front of the maidservants. Is this the way you dance? This is inappropriate. And David responded, wrong. This is very appropriate. This is the way I am showing and I am expressing my passion toward Hashem. And this is what we have to recognize in life, that we have to be able to find our individual voice and not be so afraid of what others will say. If this is the way we feel, in an appropriate way, we are able to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So for some, it may be singing and dancing Shalom Aleichem in your living room, not just standing there in a very, you know, austere position, but to be able to really be able to give feeling and emotion to this moment of Shabbos Kodesh coming into our home. We have, and I was privileged to see when I was in Queens on this past trip, an individual had a photo album of all the Parsha cakes, right? To create Parsha cakes, create Parsha challahs, that's taking our individual tendencies, our individual abilities, and be able to use them in a creative way, to have centerpieces on the table, to be able to reflect the theme of Shabbos Kodesh, to be able, we see this oftentimes by Mishloch Manos, how people have their own creative individual type of Mishlochei Manos. Whatever it is that reflects that this is who I am as a person, this is my Avodas Hashem. And you know, there are people who are like very, you know, like they're very into saying Bli Neder every minute or Emir Tzah Hashem, and other people look at them and they say, you're crazy, you know, you're repeating it over and over again. But that's where they're holding and they're Avodas Hashem. So instead of looking at them as crazy, we should look at them as, wow, they have a shita, they have an approach, and they need to be able to respect that. This is the way they, you know, it's not a compulsive disorder, not necessarily, but this is the way that they are able to relate to Hashem. The Gemara speaks about in Source 42 of an individual who was able to dance. He juggled three myrtle branches in front of a kala. And Rabbi Zeir said about him, the elder's embarrassing us. But ultimately, this individual, Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, who juggled the three hadassim when he passed away, there was a cloud surrounding him that very few people were privileged to have because he wasn't embarrassed. This was his way, right? We know Rabbi Feldman from Ner Yisrael juggles at weddings. This is beautiful, right? Not to say this is beneath my dignity, but no, this is the way that I can be mesameach a chasen akala. This is my way of showing this azus to kedusha. This is my way of showing my passion, my way of celebration. And this is very important, that yes, we have to be careful what people say, right? There's that shidduch question list that's going to come at one point in your life that's going to come to haunt you. No, but in all seriousness, there is conformity. But at this very same time, there is the ability to be an individual, to do what is right, even if it looks a little bit different or strange, because this is the way that I know, ultimately, it's the best to serve Hashem. Perhaps on a one-time example of this, it's a story of the altar of Slobodka, who once came to a certain shul, and he asked for mincha, and he asked to daven in front of the amud. So of course, I gave him that tzchus, and when he started davening, he started mispronouncing a lot of words, and people were like a little bit surprised, you know, here's this great Talmid Chacham who's mispronouncing words. It only became clear at the end that there was an individual who was saying Kaddish in the back, who clearly didn't know Hebrew, forget about Aramaic. And Slobodka, the altar of Slobodka, understood that if this person would daven for the Amud, people would snicker and people would make fun of him. And even when he said Kaddish, people would also, you know, make faces. So he wanted, in order not to embarrass this person, that he too made mistakes, that he too had difficulty reading, making this person feel better. That's Azus de Kedusha. That's the Shita of saying that at the expense of my own honor, I am ready to do something for the glory of Hashem. Now, with this in mind, says the Sefer, this was the Inyan of Rabbi Akiva's students. They were individuals who, in 44, who lo haku heim ben ditivot dar chayish, they didn't go in the path of regular people. Heim anchei ruma maila mibnei haliyah asher nafsham chizka l'Hashem. They had tremendous passion and yearning for Hashem. They had the eish kodesh yokedet b'libam, the fire of God burning inside of them. They went on their own path. They had the shtus de kedusha. They chose powerful ways in order to be able to serve Hashem. What was wrong? So Chidushei Arim says so powerfully in the asterisk in 44 that our relationship with people has to be klal uprat uklal. We have to realize that we're part of a community, individualize ourselves, and then be able to come back to the klal, to the group. These individuals had understanding they were part of the 24,000. And they individualized themselves. They were unique. But they weren't able to then come back and appreciate each and every one's path. It's not just enough that you have a shita. This is what you're going to do in your way of expressing your avas Hashem. And people might look at you, parsha cakes? Are you crazy? Like, where are you coming from? No. This is wonderful. This is great. This is my way of, you know, expressing my love, my, you know, chinuch bani. But you have to respect these people. You don't call them crazy. You don't call them nuts. And that's what was missing. Each one had their avodas Hashem, which was great. But they weren't able to then appreciate each other's avodas Hashem. And here, I'm sure, we've done these pieces many times in the past, we'll just do it very briefly, notes in his Inyanim of Chodesh Elul in 46 and 47, how important it is to recognize that a person must say, Bishvili Nivra Olam, the world is created for me. We have to recognize our individualism. Yaakov Avinu is described when he fought the angel as being Levado, alone. There is a value in being alone, in knowing who you are. He speaks about that the real litmus test in 48 is at the time when you're all by yourself. How do you behave? What do you think about? Is it hard for you to be alone? Are you bored with yourself? When you get into the car, is the first thing that you do, you turn on the radio, turn on a tape, a CD, forget about radios anymore, or tapes, you turn on a CD, or, which is fine to do. Or do you also have times when you're driving that there's silence in the car, that you're able to hear your own voice and get to know your own self? And as we've spoken about, Rav Wolbe speaks about how careful we have to be about putting very young children into dormitory situations. Because, and I think it's not only dormitories, it's really our school system that's very much into the cookie cutter model. And unfortunately, we see what happens with our cookie cutter model. We have not created real leadership in the Jewish people. And sometimes we ask ourselves, well, how do you create leadership? And I think that this is one of the nekudas of allowing people to be individuals. They don't all have to dress the same, talk the same, act the same. That there's something about being able to show your individualism, show your uniqueness. I'd like to do this, again, within the realms of Kedusha, of holiness. This is how I express myself. And when you are able to find that voice, that's a very powerful voice. It's a voice of self. However, he then speaks about, we have to recognize that we can't have that voice being a voice, which is the challenge of Rabbi Akiva's students, of being a voice that's alone. And he gives a very powerful mashal in 49 in the asterisk, that the Jewish people are like a tree, where we are all part of the same roots and the same trunk of the tree. But we have to recognize and we have to understand that there are branches to the tree, that there are leaves to the tree, and the branches and the fruit and the leaves are different. No two leaves are exactly the same. Their colors, their designs are slightly different. But if a leaf thinks it doesn't need to be attached to the tree, then it's lost it. A leaf has to understand, yes, it's an individual, but yes, it gets its nourishment from the tree. And that is why every person has to daven, even their own personal supplication. Put it with the lashon of the rabbi for all those who need this type of help, this refuah. And recognize that you should be somebody involved in communal projects, or at least be somebody in 53 who is nosei ba'olim chaveiro, who feels the pain of another person, who's going to feel where another person is at. It's specifically Rabbi Akiva's students who died at this time of the year, when they had the ability to see their individual greatness in their shita, in their path, but weren't able to then bring it back to the cloud. Because this is what the time of Sfiras HaOmer is about. It's about working on being able to come to Mamad Har Sinai, where we all accepted the Torah ki'ish echad b'lev echad in a unified way. Very fascinating insight of Rav Wilson in Emunati Techa. He says the time of Sfira is a time to work on our Simas Chinam, our baseless hatred, our Lashon Hara, which is the reason why the temple was destroyed. To reach Shavuos, which is a time of Yovel and Chayrus, a time of ultimate freedom. And he says that is why, and it's very fascinating, I never thought about it till I saw it in here. We have a custom both now as well as in the 3 weeks, and he talks about why also right before Rosh Hashanah. But particularly now, in the time of Sfira and in the 3 weeks, we double up Parshas. Achrei Mos Kedoshim, Bahar B'chukosai, right? We have Chukos Bala, Matos Maseh, which is in the 3 weeks. Why do we double up Parshios? So he says very simply, he says because every letter of the Torah is like a neshama of Klal Yisrael's soul. And every parsha is like a shevet, it's like a tribe. And we know that there were 12 paths in the splitting of the sea because there are 12 different paths to serve God. Everyone has their unique color in the spectrum. However, even though every shevet, every parsha is unique, but in order for Achdus to reign in the Jewish people, sometimes we have to take two opposites and put them together. We have to take these two parshios and be able to combine them together to create the gula. It's a model, he notes, of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, who each had their own shitas, their own ways of avodas Hashem. Very different. But Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel married within each other. That yes, you can have your own shita, but you also know how to get back to the cloud. And I'll just mention in parentheses here, he says something very fascinating. He says, that is why, he says, when the two parshios come together, the aliyah of Shlishi turns into, the aliyah of Shishi in the first parsha turns into the aliyah of Shlishi. And that is the way to reconcile two different minhagi between the Ashkenazim and the Hasidim, which is the most important aliyah. The Ashkenazim hold Shlishi is the most important aliyah, the Hasidim hold Shishi is the most important aliyah. So here, when the two parshios are together, so Shlishi and Shishi become combined. So that's, again, an interesting depth and dimension that we normally don't think about. Now, what is the significance that Rabbi Akiva's students stopped dying on Lag BaOmer? So we know, and this is the last page, source 56, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai came out of the cave on Lag BaOmer. We're all familiar with the Gemara and Shabbos that speaks about when he came out of the cave, the second cave, the second time, he saw a Jew carrying two hadassim for Shamor and Zachor, and he's able to praise, look how wonderful the Jews are. The end of the Gemara is less well known for us. Rabbi Shimon says, Ha'il v'drachish nisa, since a miracle is performed to rescue me, I shall go and remedy something to benefit the community. And he was able to take a certain city, which wasn't quite sure where what was pure and impure, and establish the boundaries of purity for the Kohanim. And he learned this from Yaakov Avinu. It says, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. Yaakov came Shalem, whole, in his body, intact in his wealth, intact in his Torah. Vayichan epnei ha'ir. And he encamped before the city, and a rabbi said he made a new coin for the city, and other people said he established marketplaces for them, and other people said he established bathhouses for them. You see from Yaakov Avinu, you see from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that when you have worked on yourself as an individual, he was sholem, vayvo Yaakov sholem, whole, intact. Shimon Bar Yochai, 13 years in the cave, your immediate reaction should be, now what do I do for the community? Klal uprat uklal. The community, the individual, and then bring it back to the community. And perhaps with this we can explain the Sheni Shmuel in 38 and 39, that this parallels the zodiac sign. The sign of Nisan is a sign of a lamb. A lamb follows, it's a sign of the group. The zodiac sign for Iyar is an ox, which is a very individualistic animal. And the zodiac sign for Sivan is twins, which is again coming together. And that is the challenge, to be able to be part of a group, to be able to have our own voice and our own special tafkid within this group, and then be able to come back and bring it back within the group. And with this, I think that clearly the message for us in 60, Rabbi Tatz, World Mask, first one must strive to discover one's uniqueness. What is my particular task? What essential part of the universe is mine to build? This question is critically important because a life spent pursuing some unrealistic and inappropriate goal is a life wasted, and worse, damages the entire structure. But then one has to recognize that it's about then fitting in to the group. There's a certain thrill and a certain greatness in being able to see oneself in the larger whole and being able to yield oneself and in that way really actualize oneself, that I'm not alone. I'm not my own apple. I'm an apple that's part of a larger tree, that's part of a larger structure. We need to take ourselves and be able to put ourselves back within the community and the way we interact with others. And perhaps with this, we can appreciate in Kriya Moed, Rav writes in 62, that the time of Siras HaOmer is a time where we all stand up and we're all counting Sfira. We're all counting the same count. We all have the same days. It's not like, you know, one person has this count, another person has that count. But our rabbis teach us on the pasuk, "Usfartim lachem, you shall count, she'as Sfira l'chol echad ve'echad," that every individual has to count. And that's the message here. Yes, we're all counting the same count, but every individual, you can't hear someone else count for you. Every individual has to count, because every individual counts. And that's what it means to striking the balance, where we have to recognize what is our voice. We have to proclaim this day a unique day for us, and we are unique, and our voice has to be heard in our vote of Hashem. But it's part of the larger count that everyone is counting in terms of our vote of Hashem, and we have to be able to recognize this and respect this as well. And therefore, in conclusion, the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva who are rectifying the 24,000 that died in Shittim on the first level, they are the Gilgul and taking out their sparks, recognizing that there's a tremendous amount of holiness that's found in impurity, and our lives is to extricate ourselves. On the second level, to be able to understand that love has to be tempered with gvura. And you have to recognize that if we have a challenge in our major task, in our major area, that has to be taken with far more seriousness than if it's just an ancillary area that we need to work on within our lives. And finally, that there is an aspect of Shittim that comes from Beit Hashem that will water the Mayana Shittim. And that is Atzei Shittim Omdim. And that is being an individual, knowing our Yechidus, knowing our uniqueness, knowing our strength, knowing who and what we are, hearing our voice, doing something that makes us proud in our vote of Hashem, even if people look at us and say, are you nuts? This is what you're doing? Yes, because this is the way I can be able to express and reflect my love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But our challenge has to be able to respect that within others, to be able to appreciate that within others. And Michal ultimately gets punished because she couldn't appreciate that in David HaMelech. Rabbi Akiva's students were exemplary. They were metaking the shitim. They took the idea of shitim, of shota, and they went full force in being able to rectify it. And they were able to make it a paramount of Kedusha. But they weren't able to appreciate it in others. And because they had klal uprat, but not klal prat uklal, to bring it back to the community, to respect it in others, for that reason, they perished. And our challenge is to see ourselves as part of this larger tree, but to be able to hear that voice and see our uniqueness as well.